Yeah, and it's like, yeah, we established this. And then, you know what actually annoys me when everyone's like, in 2015, that's what went wrong. Like, the players got injured and there was no one to come in. And I was like, that was me! I was there. I was like, shut up! Shut up! Jason, what do you know? Like, where was the closest you got the World Cup?
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Welcome to House of Rugby URC, sponsored by Bank of Ireland, proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. And yes, unfortunately, I made it back. Once again, I'm joined by the lovely Megan Williams, Greg O'Shea, and a friend of the show, Mr. Darren Cave, the Ulster and Ireland legend, might I add.
Correct. Thanks for picking that one up for me. It's good to be back. I'm always a wee bit in awe of him, the rugby lad. So it's great to be in his company again, looking so fresh. Last week's show just wasn't the same, guys, was it?
No.
Well, I actually managed to get a word in last week.
Hey!
And it was great content listening in the car on the way down, so well done.
Yeah, flowed nicely last week. But look, yeah. Jason, it's good to have you back with your new coloured beard and everything.
Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
You had
thanks
some spare time in Edinburgh to get it fixed.
I did, of course, yeah. Busy away. Can we look, I decided to be rude now, but can we talk about a bit of rugby or anything, no?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Start off, obviously, of course. But actually, before we get into the rugby, we'll start off with, I know you don't want to speak about it, but poor Munster are stranded over in South Africa.
Yeah, so that news just came in now, didn't it? They have to go back to the hotel. Someone got COVID.
Yeah, so one of the players has COVID, and then you've got another case there with Cardiff. I've had a case as well. It looks like Scarlets are able to come back and they're getting a flight out today. Zebra are still stuck over there. Like, obviously, it's an evolving story, and by the time the show comes out, there'll be more news, but like,
logistically a nightmare, but like, it's getting towards Christmas now, and Christmas is what, 3 Sundays away? Yeah. Like, that's pushing it for them. I'd say there's some not happy campers down there.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, like, what would you do?
I feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
Why are you smiling?
I'm a big Munster fan, we all know that, listeners of the show. I do genuinely feel for them. I feel for the URC. It's like, logistically, it's not an easy tournament to run. It's all very new. Loads of excitement about South African teams. We've got the proper South African teams, and like, where do you go from here? You have people like these conversations. When are the, forget about the health and family side of it. Like, if you bring it back to rugby, like, when are they going to play? Quarantines.
Yeah, the Titan Cup coming up as well, isn't it?
Titan Cup, you have Challenge Cup, Champions Cup, and then those four fixtures. Like, it's just going to be, I wouldn't like to be the fixture secretary or the organiser trying to organise this.
It's probably going to be a mixture of academy guys and the Irish internationals mixed together, which would be nicer than academy guys. But
the cast and wasps to play. Like, I mean, they've got two full squads. Like, yeah. So, I mean, like, a Munster were going to win it this year. Like, that was obviously...
I was going to say, give them 2 points, 2 losing bonus points, I would have given them and just get on with it. Like, do you know what I mean?
Right, look, let's move on to the actual rugby. Obviously, the Ulster and Leinster game, we're going to have to talk about that, I suppose. I don't know, the much happened in that game, did it?
Yeah, I think Ulster got a win. But anyway, Connacht are playing as well.
Anyone who listened to the last show I was on, Connacht, they're no longer my new favourite team after the absolute spanking they gave Ulster a month ago. But Connacht were, like, hold on, are we talking about Ulster or Connacht?
Well, look, we're going to start off with Ulster. Like, so, obviously, Ulster won, okay? Right, fair play.
Yeah, we're on Cole
Connacht. Here's your reaction.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm astounded. Yeah. I genuinely didn't think they were going to do it. Like, I remember when I was playing, see when Leinster announced their team, like, it's almost boring because it's always like, okay, you've got 6 internationals left out, and they bring in guys like James Tracy, you know, you're going to 6 caps, Ed Byrne, 6 caps, there's just caps everywhere. And I sometimes thought when I was playing that, see if you had Leinster full strength, you're actually as well playing the full strength as you were that sort of team, because the full strength team, you might get them on a bad night, not interested. Whereas when you've guys who are like fighting for contracts, fighting for places. So although I thought Ulster were good, I was quite disappointed with a few of the Leinster performances, you know?
Yeah, they just weren't at the races. It was unlike them. Yeah. Very uncharacteristic mistakes. It seemed like they were a bit lost of creativity in the centre of the park a couple of times, didn't it? And James Hume had a serious game with Stuart McCluskey as well. What did you make of their game?
They were good, and I know you didn't like James Hume's celebration, Greg.
It wasn't for me. Like, you'd see that on the Seventh Circuit.
Like, reaction, yeah. It was real odd, wasn't
look,
it?
James, I've never met you, man, but I'm not a fan of that kind of celebration.
Well, let's talk about how he played. He played well. And I thought the physicality he brought in defence, he was one of a few. You could see that Ulster's game plan without the ball was just a try, and like, they were all over the, you know, in and around the offside line, should we say, all night, flying off the line, knocking boys over, and that was obviously their plan. Let's go down and, you know, fire a shot, so to speak, just cause mayhem, and it really worked for them. They really disrupted Leinster.
Like, they shook Leinster really well, didn't they? But, like, I thought Ulster, in my opinion, I don't know if you agree with me, lads, that they just looked like they wanted the game more.
Yeah.
Like, even the reaction of the little wins, you know, the fight on the ground, the turnovers, that some of them just, like, jumping up and down on the wing because they were just so excited to be winning, and Leinster just was a little bit flat. Like,
sometimes, over the past couple of years, I have thought with Leinster, how do they do it every week? Do you know, everyone has bad games.
Yeah.
Everyone, and they were poor last night. But if you look, they haven't had many blips. Do you know, over the last? And I always want how I remember back to. Like when I was playing, like you'd play crap like once every 5-6 weeks, or at times my Ulster career once every second week. But do you know what I mean? And so I was surprised, but I do think credit to Ulster. They had a real clear, like even with the ball, they didn't actually do a lot. I just think they tried to frustrate Leinster. Mm. They just said, let's just keep it.
They were just so aggressive, like in the D line. It's just encapsulated in James Hughes. Only try, but he made one try where he got outside Larmer, I think.
Yeah.
But when he got up and just blitzed and got in the and intercepted the ball, but that was just the synopsis of the whole game, like the aggression.
Byrne, Connors, Frawley, O'Brien, and it's kicked off, and away goes Hugh, and Hugh is now in front of him. He's going to do it. Ulster are going to get the try that surely seals the victory at the RDS.
The player didn't need to give that pass. Like, there were so many 50-50 passes in the match. Like, Leinster were making loads of mistakes on those knock-ons, but actually letting Ulster get into the game by giving those passes. Like, do you know, it was kind of like I said, with the fight, the extra little fight, Leinster didn't seem to have it. Yeah. Like, he shouldn't have thrown that pass. Should have done a bit of leg drive, used his fend.
Yeah,
exactly.
Get past the game line before you give him that offload.
Yeah. Yeah.
First Ulster win in RDS since 2013.
Yeah, that's 2013.
Did you ever win in RDS?
I lost once or twice, or 10. But yeah, I played in 2013. It was actually a bizarre incident at the end of the game. Sean Cronin went for the try line, and George Clancy said, like, no try full time, and then he got convinced to go to the TMO, and then there was a real like Johan Muller was the captain. He was like trying to bring us off the pitch, and I don't know actually what would have happened. So it went to the TMO and it was no try, but I actually wonder, like, you can imagine the Ulster uproar. So we were like, nah, we're away. Like, as if the score were
sitting in the dressing room already.
Looking at Leinster in the game, looking at Robbie Henshaw's try, the second try. Obviously, we've seen Greg Jones' try, the first try for Ulster, but excellent hands there from Henshaw, and excellent finish.
Yeah, really terrible pass from Luke McGrath. I presume his elbow got hit or something, but it's an incredible pickup by Henshaw.
That pass from McGrath, that was typical of the whole night. Every time Leinster had a lot of that, you know, off lineouts, the ball was like squirting out and. Yeah. It was a great pickup at Henshaw.
It wasn't a wet night, was it?
Nah, it was cold, but it was dry as bone. Yeah,
it was,
Great.
Well, though, I mean,
first match back as well, isn't it?
Yeah, he had a super game.
That's first match back for Leinster, yeah. He played for Ireland against Argentina, and then he just his first game back for Leinster. Yeah. But
he's incredible.
It takes a lot to get those kind of pickups, because it is hard when the bounce is a bit awkward as well.
Even not only that, and then also then to get his body into the right position to get there and score the try. Like, that's why he's a test lion, I suppose.
Yeah. He's had some, but 18 months ago, 2 years, and I wonder where he was sort of slipping to in the Irish pecking order. And then, do you know what it was? I think it was a game against France in Paris, and it was when Ireland were crap. I think it was in around the, you know, when they finished the Six Nations in November. When was that? I don't know. My life's a blur.
Yeah.
Don't sleep. Two kids.
Yeah.
And he came off the bench and scored this worldie in the corner. And see, since then, he's just been unbelievable. Yes. And then he went to the Lions and he was unbelievable. Last week, for his first game in a few months at that level, I thought he was class. Mm. And then last night, he was definitely Leinster's best player as well.
Definitely. Yeah. I remember talking to him just before the summer, just before the Lions tour.
Do you know
and,
him?
But no, it was just an interview. I don't know. just an interview. But
were you texting him?
Look, Robbie, you can give me a text if you want. I was chatting away to him anyway, and just asking him, because as you saw, his form just skyrocketed. He basically just said, he had all that time in lockdown to just go, okay, what can I focus on? What do I need to fix?
Yeah.
So he just had all the time in the world. I said, obviously maybe he did feel like he was slipping, because all he did was just literally train his absolute arse off for how many months during lockdown, and he came back three times the player he is. Like, and I think he's one of the best centres in the world at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah. The fact that he's played all the Lions tests and played really, really well, which just shows that he's world class.
Like, yeah, he's got a nice blend of, like, he's big and physical, yeah, but he can pass. And do you know what I mean? It's not like he's a sort of, he's not just like a Bosch guy. He can kind of do it all. He's got nice footwork. He saw the pickup. He's got, like, I think he's got a really good blend of, like, size and sort of skill, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of world class, sorry, speaking of world class 13s, it's good to see a world class 13 playing for Ulster now, well, and getting an excellent try there in the to seal out the game.
I mean, some people say that you know, Robbie and James learned it all from me, my dad. yeah, listen, Hume, he's playing really, really well. I think being in Ireland camp and even though he didn't play, it's still good to be around those players. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not that far in the Ulster environment, and just to go into that environment and be training with guys at that level, like, not that there's not good players at Ulster, and not that it's not a good environment, but when you go, that's a complete different level, and he's rubbing shoulders with Test Lions, etc.
He's obviously really feeling good in his game as well with doing a celebration like that in a local derby.
Yeah,
like,
you Greg, with that face.
Yeah,
it's just a little bit cocky, like.
It's just like, again, Leinster in RDS, first time winning since 2013. Yeah. It's like, do you know, but he played unbelievable, and he was probably the best centre in the night for me, up there with Henshaw. Like, I actually would have given it to James Hume as best centre. Yeah. When he went outside in that outside break and then went back in and Ulster scored, that's just incredible. So he's obviously picking up a few tips from
to celebrate. Yeah. Definitely picking up celebrations off you anyway, says he.
I couldn't have gone on an overs if I was in a taxi, like, to the main. But that was like, that build up that Greg Jones try. Like, yeah. I was chatting about it on commentary. Like, it was real, because it looked for the world that, like, it was going to be that wee three-man loop play that everyone in all rugby does, and that, like, you were swore in your life that he was going to come on, like, a short line, and then McCluskey had the three options, but the last minute he just turned and went on that out, and you could see Jordan Larmour actually got fooled as well, and that was all he needed. Nice handoff. Larmour did well actually to scramble, but it was really, really nice play.
It was a great scramble tackle out of Larmour, to be in fairness, and just stopping that close to the line.
Yeah
definitely. Special mention as well for Will Connors, friend of the show. He was on with us a few weeks ago, had a pretty bad injury, came back, cameo off the bench. Obviously sad to see Dan Levy go off again, but good to see Will get back on the
pitch. What an impact. Straight off the bench, he did a turnover. His chop tackling, like, there's no one else in the world doing that kind of tackling.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
It's like the old Dan Idiot way, isn't it? Like, he must be watching Dan Idiot tapes for months before he started his cooking career.
Yeah. You talk about, you know, like, players being quickly forgotten. Like, and I don't want to bore, like, we all know Irish rugby's got ridiculous depth at the minute, so we can skip that conversation. But I genuinely forgot about him in this autumn, because there's the amount of back rowers. And then last night I saw the team sheet and I was like, he started for Ireland in the Six Nations this year, albeit last season in 2020.
He got his debut and got man the match and scored a try against Italy.
Like, look at their back row last night. I was saying to you before the show, their back row last night was Scott Penny, it was Scott Penny, Dan Levy and Rhys Ruddock started. Yeah. And they had Will Connors on the bench. Then they've also got Doris, Conan and Van der Fleer, who are in the Ireland squad to come back.
And Max Deegan was on the bench
as
well.
Max Deegan is there as well. There's like a former under-20s captain. I mean,
it's ridiculous. And those, in particular at the minute, like in the autumn there, I was really impressed with Doris. Doris and Conan, I think Van der Fleer, I've come to expect it from him a bit, but those two, I was just like, those guys are unbelievable. It's hard. Sometimes you wonder, is it harder to get in the Leinster team than the Ireland team?
I'm surprised that some of the back rows aren't going down to Munster and Connacht, and where there's more space. Like,
we're always up for a few Leinster players up in Belfast. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean?
So you've got big Dwayne coming to you, so you don't need anyone. Like,
it'll be all right.
Big Dwayne Vermeulen isn't exactly a bad signing, I suppose. Is he?
But Leo Cullen must sometimes, like, and Lancaster, when they're picking the team, they must be a wee bit of, like, you know, throwing darts over the shoulder. Give it him.
We had Will Connors in a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him that question, like, and he goes, it's usually depend on the game plan we're going to have for that week. Like, if they need a chop tackler, Will's going to go in. If they need someone to carry the ball, it might be Dan Levy, and that's how they seem to be picking it. Like, but he's obviously given the political answer as well.
Sit down with 45 Irish internationals and go, and then it was like, do you know Sean Cronin? Like, he was on the bench last night.
How many international caps has he had? Yeah.
50 or 60 caps, wasn't he? Like, something like that. Like, it's insane.
Ryle said it in commentary, I should know. I think it's higher than that. I think it's in the 70s.
Is it?
Yeah.
I remember he was like, he managed to get to 50 caps at one stage without starting a Six Nations game, because he had so many games off the bench.
He's the most capped bench player.
I think so, because he reaches 50 cap without starting a Six Nations game.
And there's actually a backstory here, because I actually know Greg's dad from many years ago, and Sean Cronin Is there still the case that John Cronin is like your dad's favourite ever
person? My dad loves
Sean
Cronin.
Not even favourite player. Literally his favourite ever person.
Yeah, he absolutely loves Sean Cronin.
Yeah, at Ireland under 21s, so while Niall was the coach, or the manager, that was the irony. Like, he was a manager, and a manager in rugby is not like a coach. It's someone who's like administrative, organisational.
This is my father, by the way, if anyone knows who Niall is.
Yeah, so and Niall was proper, like, you know, normally like the Irish manager would be very like logistical, but he was like, he wanted in. Like, I thought he was going to talk up a few times, and he always used to go on about like he loved Shannon, and Sean Cronin was Shannon. So he always used to go on about Sean Cronin, and he was kind of, he wasn't really into like the 21st century rugby player, so I can't imagine what he thinks about your like Bikram and hot yoga and stuff like. But I just always remember Sean Cronin was in that team and he loved him like Shannon.
Yeah. The whole family's like that. Like, he's probably the quietest when it comes to Shannon. My uncles and cousins, even myself, like, it's all Shannon.
I think Sean Cronin is his favourite ever person. Yeah. That's to be clear, not player, person.
Yeah, my dad's old school when it comes to rugby now. I can only imagine what kind of stuff he was up to. I remember meeting Fionn Carr, this is a side story, in the sevens team.
Yeah.
And Fionn Carr didn't realise that Niall O'Shea was my father. And we're sitting down having lunch in between sessions, and Fionn goes, yeah, I had this, I was going to say bad, I'm not allowed to curse, I had this fella as a manager who was so hard, he was just, and his name was Niall O'Shea. And I just looked at Fionn, and all the boys were like, this is so awkward, and no one told Fionn until after, like, and then he was all, like, apologetic to me. I was like, man, how are you supposed to know? I know my dad is a hard arse, like,
I think I remember him giving off about, like, players getting massage and stuff. You know, I think there was, I can't remember what happened, it was that long ago, and I remember there was, like, a team meeting, and something had gone wrong, and Mark McDermott was the coach, who was, Crackers, McDermott.
Yeah. Like, he's head coach over in Russia now, I think.
That sounds about right. He's mental. Like, he was mad. And I remember Niall came out of nowhere and started going like, yeah, he's up there on the massage table. We're like, what's going on here?
So I grew up with him. But like, in fairness, it's worked. He coached my Shannon team underage. He coached my school's team, and we won everything. Like, we used to run
the old school.
Oh my God. Run us into the ground, like, which is, it worked up. Yeah. Shout out to my dad.
Will he be watching or listening?
He'll be listening to this. Yeah. All right, we move on. Stop talking about my father.
Yeah. Where were we? Ulster 20, Leinster 10.
Yeah. You're happy enough with that. You're happy enough with that. Do you want to take us into the Connacht game?
I'd have taken that result before the game. Just put it that way. Shame and Leinster didn't get a losing bonus point. You know yourself. Anyway, sorry.
Super game. Yeah, really good. But we'll move on to Connacht and Ospreys. 46-18, and you were just saying there as well, Darren, that it was absolutely a huge game from Connacht. The best you've seen them, like.
Connacht are unbelievable. What is it with Connacht? Like, sometimes I watch them and I'm like, you know, back to 2003, disband them. And then sometimes I watch them and I'm like, they are the best. Like, against Ulster, have we talked about Ulster?
Another 40 points.
No, against they were unbelievable. They were. And then, who was the other game they beat? Was it the Bulls way back when?
Yeah.
And then,
they lost against the Dragons, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that was a poor game.
Yeah, and, but it's the try, like, how they play, and like they're the only team that can play rugby at that level in those conditions.
In sports ground. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Them and the Crusaders, they're the only one teams in the world that can play in those conditions.
But the weather was really, really bad. It was coming down, and they executed the ball like so well. The play and just keeping the ball alive and doing the simple things really well was like super impressive. I think it was like seven tries.
Yeah. Seven tries. Weather.
Like, really exciting, fun game to watch. Like,
it was really impressive for me, and I actually thought it. I was like, Oran McNulty, it was his first start at fullback.
Yep.
He was making breaks as if it was like 30 degrees sun out, like, and he was sprinting. I was like, this guy's unbelievable.
Connacht's comfortable with ball in hand, even in these conditions, and away goes McNulty, and he's through. The young man, first start. Another try for Connacht.
They're used to the rain, I think, in Galway at this stage in the sports ground. So it's
he was a guy, him, Bolton, that's the first time I've seen them. I couldn't believe, like, a couple, McNulty, a couple of his lines were incredible, unbelievable. Yeah. Like, I was so impressed with
The Bolton try, he made the break and gave it out to Mac Hansen. Mac Hansen, by the way, that guy can't stop scoring tries.
Yeah, he got the opening try. Like, it's a guy, you mean, I think we're almost sick of talking about the decision to show, because every week, before the Autumn Internationals, it was just Mac Hansen this, Mac Hansen that. He got called into the Ireland squad. He trained with the Ireland squad during the Autumn.
I wanted to ask you about that. What did you make of him getting called in ahead of other guys?
Do you know, it's a real I think sometimes with people getting called in, I do think as a coach, you learn a lot about players, getting them in firsthand. So I don't really mind when, if Andy Farrell and co, like Kat, they just want to see the guy move and see what he's like around the environment. And I think particularly, I can't believe I'm about to reference Ireland's depth. With the depth Ireland have, I just think, like, Ireland at the minute, you know, second choice, third choice, fourth choice, it's all very similar, yeah. You know, so I don't think bringing a guy in to get a look at him is sort of a bad idea, just see where he
and
fits in.
Threatening now, Connacht, and the Ospreys have got to keep their defensive effort alive. It goes out wide, Mac Hansen steps back inside, gets away from the first and the second, over he goes. Hansen is in his fifth try of the season. It was a terrific finish.
Like, we've seen him do this time and time again with the step back inside, like that clip.
Like, he steps well, it's for fun. Like, his feet are ridiculous.
Yeah.
He was getting around the park really well as well and creating loads of options for the backs coming in through the centre as well.
It's true, actually. That's one thing I didn't ask. His link-up play for a winger, he's not afraid to get involved. Mm. You know what I mean? He's not one of those typical wingers that's going to hang out the wing. Like, he gets stuck in and he offers himself up.
Yeah, it's great to see Jack Carty playing really well again. He was just putting people in space, like even there at the end for Conor Fitzgerald's try. He's just playing unbelievable. It was good to see Jack Carty didn't get any minutes for the Irish team over the Alba Internationals, but he's playing incredibly, isn't he, Darren?
Yeah, he's class. I like him a lot. It's just, I think Farrell with the fly half thing, I almost think he's like, he has just got to figure out, and it looks like Carberry is the answer to the question of who is, like, World Cup quarterfinal, fingers crossed we get there, and Johnny Sexton for some reason isn't playing. Who is playing? And I do appreciate that the tournament's a couple of years out, but that to me is like one of the key things we need to find out. Yeah. Like, did I mention Ireland have got a lot of depth and a lot of positions? That is probably the main one where, like, if somebody's not playing, like, you're going, right, who's next? And it's not that there isn't people there, it's just guys, good players are there, but I think it was great that Johnny Sexton didn't play against Argentina, and I would like to see him not play a significant amount of games because we need somebody else to be there. You know, any other position, like say James Ryan's out, you know, a Tadhg Byrne comes in or an Ian Henderson comes in, the back row, you could talk about it all day, but a fly half's the one. Obviously Tadhg Furlong's on a different level as well, but those are probably the two positions whereby if our best player's not playing, like, are we going to beat France in France or the All Blacks in France?
Yeah.
Don't know.
No, that's the thing. That's the thing. It's the only problem area we have at the moment. And then he said golden child Joey, like the Munster man. You know, Munster through and through all the way. Obviously, he was,
I think so,
came up to the ranks at Munster because you're unaware.
From Arscoreish, isn't he?
I think he's from Arscoreish.
Blackrock, Anyway, congratulations to Joey. He actually got engaged over the weekend.
He did.
Congratulations to him and Robin.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if he's over in Stafford or not, or if he, like,
no,
we're trying to figure out whether or not some of the guys flew over or not, or whether or not they're stuck over there. But
that's what the Munster management are doing at the minute as well. The ones that are home, they're trying to pick the team for the Champions Cup. You're only a couple of months retired.
Get me back in, man.
Yeah,
get
you in.
There you go. There you go. You're keeping fit. You're doing your yoga. You'll be fine.
You'll be all right.
Yeah. Just go on the wing. Not a bother.
But it was, I thought, do you know, because you didn't really touch on Ospreys, I thought Ospreys actually played really well. There were some super tries, especially with the centre kicked the ball through like three or four times, kicked it, and then the winger came
Luke
over.
Morgan then came and took it off.
Yeah. I thought that was a super try. Like, the guys in the background were like, it's a football game out there. This is amazing.
That was me. If I was the centre there, I would have clipped his ankles. Like, I'd be like,
I don't think the third team was fast enough to get there. Kind of like yourself, Darren.
It's like when there's a mall, you know, in the backs, join the mall.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, the hookers at the back and the centre's like, give us the ball. And the hooker's like, pal, like,
get away.
Get out of it. Yeah. Like,
he was like celebrating, but really, he was like, damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was some great, as you said, Megan. Ospreys really, really well, but Connacht were just unbelievable across the park. Sam Ireland had another unbelievable try.
Sam Ireland savage.
Threw a guy down as if he was like only 50 kg heavy.
Stepped
inside and finished.
No.
Unbelievable.
He's a serious player.
Yeah.
It was actually Peter Robb. He came on and nearly got the try at the end there, number 23. And I thought he did really, really well. It was a shame. What do you think of that yellow card? Because it was a high tackle and he didn't get the try.
You know, he got a penalty try at the end.
I think if he actually transferred the ball into the other side of his hand and actually fended him off,
nice, mate.
It would have been a deadly try.
Yeah,
as far as when you run into us, you get a bit of white line fever, don't you? Yeah. So that's something that he can take from that game.
He's a young fella coming off the bench, but he's a big lad as well.
He's been in Connacht for years.
Is he?
Yeah, he's just been injured, had a lot of injuries, and it was kind of like he got a few minutes there. there. I think it was kind of like first time getting onto the pitch, getting the ball in a try situation. So, as you said, a bit of a white line fever. Yeah.
When I saw it, from, you know, that angle behind, when I saw it and I had the ball in his left arm, and all I could think to myself was, how big are your quads? Like, have you seen the size of his
Brilliant.
Quads?
Yeah.
Oh, my
He's
goodness.
A big guy.
He looks like Johnny Bravo, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's a big boy. He's got traps coming out of his bloody ears as well.
No wonder you don't tackle him around the neck. Like, you're not getting your arms around those thighs.
Yeah, but lucky for him, it was a penalty try, because Alex Wootton was standing there waiting for the ball, as you said. He should have nearly gave it off to him.
Definitely.
Good win for Connacht, though. As I said, like, they're motoring on well at the right times. Like, I mean, they only have, there's the Dragons lost it. Two games they've lost it. So they've beaten Ulster, they've hammered Ospreys. Yeah. They've had some good. They should have beaten Munster. They were very close to beating Munster in that game in Thomond Park. Like, so.
I remember them going. I remember going when they were going on to that Ulster game, and I expected Ulster to beat them, and thinking to myself, like, if Connacht lose here, they're actually like, it's amazing how quick it changes. Like, if they'd have lost that game, you know, and suddenly they're like in and around the bottom four, but a great win, 5 points, two of those, and they're absolutely flying.
Yeah.
So good on them.
Looking ahead to next weekend, then you've got Connacht and Leinster. So, like, Leinster coming off the back of the defeat. They're going to have a lot of players coming back in. Connacht are motoring, and we'll have players come back in. That could be a good game, lads.
Yeah, it'll be a great game, yeah. Where's it on?
Is it on? I think it's
at the RDS.
Is it on the RDS? Okay.
Yeah. Make sure you listen on Premier Sports to hear myself and Ryan Nugent, two legendary Irish commentators, self-proclaimed. Leinster... Connacht always seem to give Leinster a tough time, like, do you know what I mean? Because I just think they just... Let's just say the truth. They just hate them so much.
Was it last season they beat them in De Aviva, was it? Connacht beat the post-COVID matches. Didn't Connacht win a game against Leinster last year?
They did, yeah.
I'm trying to think. They had a big win against them.
But I'm saying, if they're pulling Leinster across the sports ground next week, then Connacht might get the win. But the fact it's going to be in the RDS, it might, I don't know.
They seem like one of... And I did say this after the All Blacks. Ireland beat the All Blacks. Leinster are the kind of team that you really don't want to play the week after they've lost.
You don't,
Now, France proved that wrong with New Zealand, but you're kind of like... What are the chances that Leinster are going to lose twice at home? Or what are the chances that the coaches have put them all up the hole all week and they put 50 points on you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because, like, they didn't have the best game. I don't think Ulster outplayed them in any way. I just think there was a lot of mistakes. Ulster just putting them under so much pressure to force them. So, like you said, I think they'll definitely give Connacht
I just think how well I did there to bring the conversation back to Ulster beating Leinster.
I just want to keep bringing it up.
I think it's going to keep going back around in circles at this stage. But yeah, as you're saying, you're right. Ulster were very lucky. You're dead right. Very lucky.
No comment.
Forget about Ulster. We have to move on to the other games now. We should be talking about Munster here now in this section, but unfortunately, Munster aren't playing. Yeah. So, like, if you want to talk about Munster in some other capacity, guys, feel free. Okay, we move on. I was waiting for the silence. No, okay, that's fine.
I don't know if you... Is Larkham leaving?
Lackham's leaving. Lackham's already signed for the Brumbies.
That's big news.
Did he get a contract in the Brumbies?
So he's leaving at the end of the season. He got offered a contract, decided not to go, and he's signed on for the Brumbies for the 2023 season, I believe.
So what's he doing for 2022?
I think it's because, like, but the season... Next year's 2022 season, he'll still be at Munster for half of it, so he can actually come back into their season starts again in 2023. Yeah. So he's not as their head coach, like.
Yeah, Munster offered him another contract as well, but he just didn't want to. He wanted to go home for family or personal reasons.
Because I am surprised he did an interview saying he absolutely loved being at Munster, so I was surprised. Yeah. But they did say, you're right, he has a young family, and it'd be so difficult, like, you know yourself. Like,
he has a young daughter and stuff. I'd say they're missing back home.
It's the other side of the world as well. It's not like he's flying back over to England, like, it's Australia. It's a 20-something hour flight to get home.
Are his family not over?
No. I'm not sure, I don't think so, no.
I don't think they are. But he's going back to
no
the same job.
No screaming toddlers in the house. Oh, poor Larkham.
Poor
baby violin. No hair,
little violin.
I don't know if it's a controversial viewpoint. I wasn't overly impressed with, like, when he signed for Munster, I was like, whoa. Like, wow, that's a guy who, you know, you get up watching Super 12 rugby, like, when and there's only one game on a weekend, and that Brumbies team he was part of, and, like, he's a guy, and I thought when Munster got him, I was like, whoa, their attack is going to be, like, unbelievable. Yeah. And I think their attack's been okay, but, like, I would actually say that his impact from the outside, his impact on Munster rugby, I thought was pretty underwhelming.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Like, I mean, I don't think anyone has seen
Yeah, much of that hasn't been that exciting, but I do think, you know better than me, Darren, for a new coach to come in, a new system, it takes a couple of seasons for that really to get adopted by the players. He's only been in, what, one full season?
I think this is his second season.
And he's not even calling the shots, like, so.
Maybe, as you said, these things take time, and maybe I had, like, an unrealistic expectation of what he was going to come in and do. I just remember that he was a player in that era that would have been, like, you know, just, like, I remember for years Ireland and Leinster had a play called Brumbies, and it was like it came Alan Gaffney when he came over from the Brumbies to Leinster, and then he was with Ireland, but it was kind of like a tip of the hat to the fact that that team actually, I think, were quite innovative, like George Gregan, Larkham, Joe Roth, Stirling Mortlock, they were like, do you know what I mean? Mm. And for the guy who was the brains of it to come over to Munster, like, as a Munster fan, I would have been buzzing.
Yeah.
And then, like, as I said, I think Munster have been grand, but, you know, I expected better than grand.
That's true. We actually had a thing. We actually had a Brumbies fitness session in Senior Cup from a guy called Chris Deleuze, who came over from the Brumbies. He actually played a small bit with Munster and Ben Martin. And, like, so much stuff came from that era, that Brumbies team.
Yeah.
Like, these fitness sessions and these moves and stuff. And, like, it's this golden era of these teams. It's pretty cool. It's you know what I mean? When he came over, we really did expect, this is Stephen Larkham. Like, and what he did for Australia in 2015 as well. And, like, he was a huge part of how they played and how they got to that final.
Yeah. And are the other coaches renewing, or what's their situation?
I don't know what the story
are
is.
Are their contracts all up?
Well, I think Van Gaan's contract is up at the end of the season, I think, or it could be next season. And then what's his name's contract is the same.
Roundtree's
contract. So, well, Roundtree's have to buy in a house out in Castle Connell and stuff, I think. So, I think he actually bought CJ Sanders' house, as far as I know.
How much?
I don't know. That's what I'm told.
Where is it, Limerick?
It's Castle Connell, yeah, Connell, Limerick, yeah.
That's some serious inside knowledge there now.
So sounds like he could be sticking around if that's the case. Like, so.
Right, there is a couple of Galway games that were on at the weekend as well, actually. Yes, there was. We'll talk about them as well, if you fancy. Just a quick round on
Bennington.
Yeah, Bennington and Glasgow Warriors. So only 1 point in it, 19 to Bennington, 18 Glasgow Warriors. And Bennington, delighted for them that they got that win. They were
good.
So excited. I followed them on Twitter and they're like a big, happy family. And there was a big picture of all of them, no tops on. That wasn't the reason why I was watching it. But they called the Lions and they had a really great game. First try, 35 seconds
in. Yeah. Lionel Smith, yeah. Incredible. 35 seconds in, caught the box kick, stepped a guy and then chipped it over his head. Unbelievable try.
Some finish, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in Try of the Week anyway. But great for Benetton to get a win. Like, you just, the Italian teams just plug away and plug away, always getting beaten. And nice for Ospreys to come down, who are a decent team, and get beaten by them. I'm delighted for them anyway.
Yeah. The Italian teams, it is hard. Like, I don't think, particularly the international team, like, I do think sometimes they get a wee bit of a hard time because, like, I know Mike was on the show last week looking them relegated. Like, he was looking the Uruguayan.
Yeah.
But I think it's really hard to measure where Italian rugby's at because Northern Hemisphere rugby is so strong. The club game's maybe a little different because, you know, the Welsh teams are, but from an international point of view, you know, Italy are struggling.
Yeah.
Look at the other teams. The other teams are flying. So it is hard for them, and it is always good. The Italian teams need to be strong. Like, the competition needs strong teams, so it's always good to see someone go there and get beat.
It was a great way for them to win as well, a kick at the end.
Kick at the end,
82
yeah.
minutes, and you saw them all cheering as if they just won a cup. Yeah. Like, so.
Well, like, come here, Benetton have won a cup more recently than Munster, Ulster, Connacht, and Leinster, technically, because they won it during the summer at the Rainbow Cup. So.
That's true.
Like, it's been 10 years since Munster won something, and Benetton won something over the summer. Like, so,
it's fair,
Same with Ulster. Like, so, like, you know what I mean? So they're obviously not doing too bad. They've got a trophy in the bag, haven't they?
Yeah,
you know?
100%.
It all comes down to one strike of the 19-year-old's boot. It's Leonardo Marin. There is a huge roar goes up. Benetton have won it. A cool head on young shoulders. The hero of the day is Leonardo Marin, once again repeating his feat of what he did to Edinburgh in match day two. He's now done it to the Glasgow Warriors.
Yeah, some great celebrations. But anyway, we're moving on. There was another game, the Dragons v Edinburgh, 30-14 from these guys. Another super game. Darren, what did you think of that match?
What did you think?
Darren obviously watched it, yeah.
You know what?
It was real game of two halves.
The first one was incredible by Boffelli. They literally, after a minute and 30 seconds, the six made a break out of the 22, gave it inside, and 15 kicked it over the top. It was unbelievable. There's also a Duke box of the week we're going to talk about in a bit out of that game. Some incredible moments.
This is Joya's second try here, I think. So Joya got two then as well, like, so.
Oh, great. Yeah.
It's good to see, like, there's a lot of Argentina players that are being, after being snapped up with the Jaguar has gone down, and like serious talent that are being picked up across Europe at the moment.
They didn't even get the time off. They played last week and they were straight into playing club rugby as well. Yeah. Poor Argentinians.
But the Gwent Dragons have been a bit hit and miss throughout the URC, haven't they? They've won some really good stuff, but they just didn't seem to perform as well.
Yeah, so they beat Connacht at one stage, like, you know what I mean? Like, and they beat Connacht well, and they're a very Connacht side, if that's a way of putting it, like up and down kind of a thing. That they can come out one week and smash someone, and they come out the next week then and get beaten. So
yeah, they had moments of brilliance in that game. Sam Davies scored a try, and Jonah Holmes scored a nice try as well. But just Edinburgh were just too good for them in the end.
So we got a try here from the Dragons. This is Sam Davies' effort, one you mentioned already.
That was a low key knock on there, but the ref let it off.
That's a good line.
Serious pace out of six inside to Sam Davies. In fairness to Sam Davies, he's an incredible player, and he always has been. It's just the rest of the team don't really seem to be on his level every time.
That was what when I was playing, and I had a mare, I used to say that I was unbelievable, and everybody else just didn't understand. You know what I mean? Nah, Duke's that, I see it playing against him. I just, he's a quality player.
He does it all, kicks.
Good run game.
Good running game, yeah, unbelievable.
He's a guy as well, like at one stage, he was like the golden child of Welsh rugby, and just got a few injuries, and then kind of ended up back, and he's trying to... I don't even think he's that old, really. No, he's 27 or 28 or something, is all he is still.
Yeah, mid-20s. Yeah, no, great player. He's just, Osprey, as you said, Megan, they're just up and down. The Dragons, sorry, they're just up and down. But decent win out of Edinburgh, to be fair to them. They're very good. They're Argentinians. They're stepping up for them.
Definitely.
We're going to try the weekend now.
I think you will.
Yeah. So first up was Shane Bolton. We spoke about it earlier in the Connacht game, where Oran McNulty made an unbelievable break through the middle, gave it out to Mac Hansen, who's just playing out of his skin at the moment, and back inside to Shane Bolton, which was incredible try for me.
Carty, and as the gap opens up and through it goes, Oran McNulty. And McNulty with the pass to Heffernan, and it's off to Hansen, and Connacht are in behind the Ospreys again. Oh, that's beautifully done. Really well executed. And it's a try. Bolton on debut.
I like that try. I love that like skip ball unders from McNulty.
Yeah, sorry, I mentioned Heffernan was in there as well with skills. Great team try.
Yeah,
Connacht got some serious backsides, and as I said, there's more of them coming out of where they're coming from. Like there's two more guys coming to debut in there. Like, where are they getting these backs from?
That was his debut, the Shane Bolton, wasn't it?
Yeah. They've had a few of them come up this season, as in, like, they seem to be producing a lot of players recently.
There's a lot of centres, but where's actually Tom Daly? Did he hurt his knee that time?
I'm not sure.
A few weeks ago he went off with his knee?
Oh,
yes. Because he hasn't played, and I was wondering.
He must have, yeah. He must be rehabbing.
Can you tell us where he is? You did your research before the show.
Yeah. It's a great finish.
It's great to see these new young fellas coming in, and they're Irish lads as well, so it's unbelievable. Yeah. As you said, Darren Cave, great depth in Irish rugby.
So much depth.
So much
across all four provinces.
There is.
Yeah. Correct. Well, honestly, we're taking the piss out of it, but like, every province is so many good players.
It's just people are sick of us, everyone saying it.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, we established this. And you know what actually annoys me, when everyone's like, in 2015 that's what went wrong, like the players got injured and there was no one to come in, and I was like, that was me. I was there. I was like, shut up Jason, what do you know, like, where was the closest to the World Cup?
I thought you were great. We great depth in 2015,
but even back in your day, man, you'd come in, there was two levels, and then there wasn't anyone after that, like, do you know what I mean?
At the start of my, when I first got involved with Ireland, it was really bad. That was like and it wasn't a criticism of like the coaches, it was just the way it was that Ireland had. And then actually in 2015 the depth was, it got a lot better, and then like now Ireland do have a lot of depth,
but like you can see it even the Irish team, like, they're arguably the best in the world. I know they're not ranked there, but they're arguably the best in the world
in a lot of positions.
It's obviously paying off, like, and which I thought was really nice last week, and Peter Manny after the game, he said he's having so much fun, most fun he's ever had in an Irish camp. For him to say that at this time, like...
Been in a lot of them.
Do you know what I mean? It's obviously a really good atmosphere.
Definitely.
Really
just good to know Pete's having fun, really.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, guys.
Yeah. So what's the second try we're looking at?
Let's get on to the second try.
The Rhino Smith one. You mentioned that, Megan.
Treviso.
Edinburgh came in dramatic circumstances. That's a fine take. And chip on from the fullback, Rhino Smith. What a start this is for Benetton! Unbelievable!
35 seconds on the clock.
Imagine Glasgow all week working on like their exits from like kick and seat. Like the coaches are like really good. Treviso or Benetton will kick here. We'll box kick out. We'll chase. We'll get into the game under the posts
straight away.
This is the angle here, like, and look, it's a lovely kick. He actually uses his right leg across. Incredible. So it looks like he kicks with his left leg, but
you get a certain coach now will be like, you need to work on your left foot kicking. You shouldn't have to kick that with your right leg.
You don't need to work on your left foot kicking if you can kick like that. Yeah, exactly. And catch the ball like that.
That was individual brilliance there. Now. And one after that was Caelan Blade, which was an incredible try. But I also thought there was better games or better tries in that game. Sam Arnold's was unbelievable, as well. So there's a few other nominations. I don't know what one you picked out.
Who chose these?
There's a research team behind this.
Was it the rugby lad?
This is producer Pat Bean. Come on.
Is it on from
don't leave
the
me
game?
Hanging here, Pat. Yeah, well, it's a team effort.
Don't get me wrong, this is an incredible try. Yeah. There's so many incredible tries all over the weekend. That's unbelievable.
In fairness, now, like, if I had to pick the tries from that game, it's very hard. Yeah. You said
there were seven tries in this game.
Yeah, and there's probably four of them that are worthy of nomination.
Rob should have given the ball there before the contact. I suppose he just quads. He just thought no one could tackle me.
Yeah.
Is that good strength there, though, or is it just bad defence? Like, I mean, he comes up and tries tackling very high there, like, and it's like. Blade isn't the biggest and strongest guy in the world.
Maybe
but
next
if you try
week
to tackle him up here.
Rugby lad choose the three nominations.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to put another nomination in, the Edinburgh one that I mentioned at the start from Boffelli, where they ran out from their own 22 a minute into the game. That for me, it was a really, really good try. I'm going to nominate myself.
Drop off to Magnus Bradbury. Bellicott snipes down the short side, bit of space, Haining the six, supported well here by Boffelli on his debut, chips over his opposite number, Jordan Williams, it's a foot race, he gets another touch, regathers, what a score from the Argentine!
I'm going for Bolton,
yeah,
because I love McNulty's line, like face ball unders kind of thing, there's some rugby nerd terminology.
Yeah.
Whoever at home knows what
for
that
the
means.
For the noses.
I would have called that an unders myself, like, but yeah.
Oh, but it was like an unders, but it was like a skip pass to an unders, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was sort of saying it was like a face ball doing unders. I could talk about it, I can't do it. Yeah. I never can do it.
Yeah. That gets my vote as well.
Yeah. It's fair. Our votes don't count us, it's always just Darren. So Darren gets to pick.
Brilliant.
Joke.
What's yours, mate?
We don't get a vote. It's Darren
picks it. I like his chip and chase.
No, he says the winger, you like that.
Yeah. That's my favourite.
What about you, Jason?
Oh, you're going to go with Bolton as well. I think Bolton was a nice try.
Nice. Okay, good stuff. Congratulations, Shane Bolton. All right.
You've made it.
Yeah. he gets a prize because Greg seems to be getting deliveries every single week from all his sponsors and stuff, so maybe send him out.
Yeah. Pass one on, like, free
Come
something.
Come on, you have so much stuff. I'm actually sick. I'm like, what else does he have now?
We're not all like famous celebrities, like, you know, unfortunately.
D-list celebrity.
Do you know what I mean?
You're our celebrity, you're the rugby lad.
This fellow's on Love Island. This is the winner of Love Island you're sitting beside here.
I'm getting stuff sent to my house.
Superstar here.
And the rugby lads here. Like, everyone at home is literally wondering what next week, what colour is his beard going to be when he dyes it again? They're literally like, it was ginger last week, now it's darker, it's going to be silver next week.
I'm just shocked that thing's on your face. I thought that was a joke from the last show, like, and it's still here, like, no.
It's November, I'm raising money.
Oh yeah, well, November, what? Like, you've had it for 6 months.
And the rest.
And on to my favourite award, the Jukebox of the Week. First up, we've got a team award for the Dragons in the game against Edinburgh. Bundle them into touch pretty well here, like, we've got the clip here. It's nice to see a team effort, I suppose.
Yeah, so I think it's our first team nomination for Jukebox. Some serious strength to push those boys over the touchline. Great, Maldi.
Edinburgh have momentum there, like, and they managed to wheel it and get them out, like, so.
Yeah.
Team effort, eh?
Yeah, we love a good maul as well on the show, don't we? Like, we absolutely love it.
I was going to say, this is a real rugby nerd nomination.
Yeah, a great maul. Like, I couldn't tell you what's happening there. Like,
I don't think I've ever actually been in a maul.
No, I think I was in there once by mistake, never to return.
Yeah.
Munster won 2 in cups at mauls, I saw.
They did, of course they did.
It's all it is.
We have the second one is Luke McGrath. He, with a crucial tackle on Billy Burns on the Leinster try line in the first half.
This is an incredible tackle, to be fair.
It is. Look, he shows serious strength here.
Ball again. Burns dinks back in. Billy Burns held up by McGrath. Big, big tackle from him and Tracy. But still, Ulster come.
Away.
Pulls him back.
It's a bit of a rock bottom, is it, kind of?
Not to James Tracy there as well. Yeah. He kind of helped him, to be honest.
Just a wee bit.
Give it to the horse, come halfway.
We'll give it to Lukey for pulling him. Lukey, if I know him.
I think that is a rock bottom.
It is. That's a great. It's a great hit. Poor Billy Burns. He probably saw the white line there.
He was going. He was thinking about who was going to. It was he or Cooney going to hit the conversion. Next thing he's on his arse.
And the last one we have is same game. Stuart McCluskey got Ross Byrne in a big hit, and there was a bit of controversy around the penalty here. It went for Ulster, but Leinster felt like it should have gone for them. Stuart McCluskey had a great game. He catches Ross Byrne nicely here.
This was a real messy passage of play here, because McCluskey looks like he might be offside. Then it looks like it's nearly a high tackle, and then James Tracy gets penalised for going off his feet, and you're like, what's going on? Frank Murphy's just blowing all around him.
What's your unbiased opinion here, Darren? Like, should it have been a Leinster penalty?
Maybe. Yeah, I really hate the head-on-head and shoulder-on-head collisions. So, like, he's definitely slipping. I don't think it's a card, but I don't think you'd have a lot of complaints if that was a penalty. I just hate people getting hit in the head because I think it's dangerous.
Of course. Yeah, there definitely wasn't anything malicious about it, because he just kind of ducked towards the end, then didn't he slip?
There's definitely no intent. There's definitely mitigation, all the cliches you want. But as I said, I just don't like people getting hit on the head.
Yeah. So we'll have to pick a winner there. So I think, obviously, I don't think we can pick that as the winner, like, because that is...
Darren's not happy with it, so
Darren's not happy with it. And it is really right, though. It's a dangerous tackle. So it's up to... I'm going to go for Luke McGrath anyway, and I don't know about you.
Luke McGrath / James Tracy, I'll go for that, yeah.
Luke, okay, we'll give
Luke I'll go with James Tracy, yeah, that was a good
You're going with James Tracy, and you're going with...
I'm just going to be open and say I like the team award.
Oh, here she goes. Like,
so lovely.
Yeah.
Rugby was the winner.
Rugby's the real winner here.
Megan loves Mall Defence.
Okay, yeah. So the jukebox award we cost to James Tracy, so...
Brilliant.
Luke McGrath, the real loser there. How did he get that taken off him? Like?
Yeah, good stuff.
We move on to some other news, guys.
So the big news is from the Barbarians match we were talking about before. The men were cancelled 80 minutes before kickoff, and what a shame. Like, 29,000 fans came in to watch the game. Like, huge for the women's game, because they actually got called in to play at 2:15 instead of 5:15.
Yeah, televising as well, yeah.
And that was in front of that crowd. It was unbelievable. But our poor lads. What do you think, Darren?
Four players, two staff.
Per Rob Carney. Like, I mean, you got to feel so sorry for the guy. That's it. You know, he hasn't achieved anything in the sport now, has he? I do think games being called off, like, we don't want it. It's not ideal. There's so much goes on to putting a game on. All the cliches. Yeah, so safety first. Totally have to appreciate all that. But it's
a shame, because there was 23 players that were able to play. Still, and they still called it off. And the Samoan guys came out and did the national anthem, which was so lovely to see. Like, you can just see
that's
how
the
proud
sad part,
they
because
were.
They don't get to play that many games.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, the Babas, like, they're all made up of superstars all over the world who are playing for their top clubs and top countries. Samoa, like, as I said, they came out and sang the national anthem at Empty Stadium because they don't get to play too many games. And this is a huge, like, playing in Twickenham against the Babas, huge occasion for them. And come here, we won't blame anyone.
It's better safe than sorry. Like, four players got a positive test and two staff, and you don't know who else would have got it. Like, 23 could have played, but you never know.
It's definitely the right decision to make. But and then we could, like, who knows what's going to happen? We could see a bit more of this. Not to bring the conversation back, but when are these teams getting home? You know, what's the quarantine periods? Like, we could see games. It's a shame, but this could be happening for a while, unfortunately.
Look, as you mentioned there, Megan, about the women's game. Yeah, the 30,000 people, and Lindsay Peat and Kira Griffin played.
Yeah, it was huge.
Both scored tries as well.
Both scored tries. Fine games. And Senny and Jenny Murphy were in the centres.
Oh, really?
So there was four Irish there, and they had an absolutely brilliant game. They just looked like they were having the time of their lives, because it was just so much fun. So they put 60 points, 65-5 to South Africa, which I'm not surprised, because some of the best players, women players in the world, were on that pitch. Like, you have the likes of Rocky Clark, who's got like 140 caps for England, Mo Hart. Like, literally, I'd be afraid to be on the pitch with them. Jeez. Yeah. But it was great to see them out there and finish off their careers with such a great game.
In front of a world record crowd as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw them score a cool try. I didn't see much of it, but I saw one of them where they set up a penalty, and two of them kind of stood left and right, and as they kind of pass it out quarterback style, one rolled over left, one rolled over right.
Class.
And then they just did a kind of another ball behind them and slid it out and scored a try in the corner. And I was like, it was the most barbarian try ever. Like, and I'd love to see him. I love to be there. That tradition isn't gone. If you're playing for Barbarians, you have to try absolutely crazy shit and try and score a mad try.
The tradition is like,
Madison's French there, Les.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
The duo Jenny and Senny in the centres, it's a duo that I just love to see them both back in the Irish jersey together as centres. Just be unreal to see Jenny Murphy back.
Yeah, speaking of World Rugby news as well, the nominations for World Rugby Player of the Year, and we have a few people in the contention. Anton DuPont, obviously, probably best player in the world. Samu Karevi, Michael Hooper and Mauro Itoje. Who are you giving it to?
Did Dracona already say on Twitter that...
he gave it to DuPont already.
Yeah, he gave it to him already. And is he not on... Oh, no, it's done. He's on the nomination.
It's changed now. Yeah, people can vote now as well. And then there's also a panel and stuff. But
which is fair.
There's some class
so
players
there. It's
just
whoever votes the most.
No, but like...
Who's the most popular in Munster? Because like, all the Munster fans will be on voting.
You have to go from the four nominees. But like, I mean, you can't not give it to DuPont. I think the only person who should have been there is Am, should have been in the nominees. Ducanio Am should have been there, I think. Yeah. That's where he's very unfair to miss out, but you can't not give it to DuPont.
Greg, can I just love? I just love that you mentioned his take and give last week on the podcast.
How good is that?
I have to be honest here, right? We're in the living room, baby crying, toddler doing God knows what, and I actually said to my wife, I said, I wish I could have done that when I was playing. And she's like, what are you talking about? Nobody mentioned it. And I was just like, that is like, anyone who wants to be an international centre, Watch that clip.
I had to bring it up.
I was so happy.
I'm through it again.
Remember it's just a pass, but like...
Manpeepi's try last week.
That was unreal.
Running at full pace, stays square, takes the ball and moves it one step over an English
player. How he's not now, I don't understand how he's not nominated. He's been doing that consistently, non-stop for South Africa, and he's unbelievable in the Lions tour. He's been unbelievable in the Autumn Nations.
Him and Dale Andy decided not to defend last week, so maybe that worked against him. But it was so nice you mentioned that. I was like, finally someone who understands me. Yeah. My 2-year-old just didn't get it. I was trying to tell her. She was painting. She was trying to draw a cat. It wasn't a great drawing either. I was trying to talk to her about taking Gibbs. She wasn't having it. Greg gets it.
I love it. I'd give it to DuPont. He's just, you can't compete with him at the moment. So, Trico's right.
Definitely. Yep. And what about in the women's end? So, you've got English duos, Zoe Adcroft, Poppy Cleal, Laura Sanzis, and Emily Boulard from France. I mean,
Megan Phillips.
Yeah, I remember playing against Poppy Cleal. She's actually a twin, so there's two of them. They usually play her sister. I can't remember her name now, but I'd give it to Poppy. She's unbelievable. She's like 6 foot. So strong, she's been so consistent for England, and she's been incredible, world class.
Excellent.
Great name as well.
Yeah.
The other big news, obviously, is World Rugby amending their eligibility rules. So now we'll say, for example, if you're like, we'll use Charles Pito as a good example, someone who you will play with Ulster, who's it's a sin that he's not playing international rugby at the moment because he is a superstar. He was class with Ulster, he's brilliant with Bristol, but now that he hasn't played for New Zealand in 3 years, he can now go back and play for Tonga. Without having to go through that sevens loophole like Fekitoa did. Like, I know you played against him over in Monaco, wasn't it?
Yeah, I played against Fekitoa. Yeah, he was out of his depth in sevens now, to be fair to him.
Greg O'Shea gave him a schooling like.
Yeah, I got him, but if he caught me on a 15s pitch now, he'd throw me around like a ragdoll.
Do you know what? I think the biggest sort of thing we need to see now is, unfortunately, like everything in rugby and life, it's going to come down to money. Like, so these players, you look at your Stephen Lewis and your Charles Piatow's and these guys that are earning like hundreds of thousands of pounds at Bristol. How happy are Bristol going to be when Charles is like, by the way,
I've got to go play for Tonga.
I'm going to be late for pre-season. I'm going to be away in the autumn. And that's the real, if they can, I don't know what the answer to that is, but if they can sort that part of it out, because clubs that are paying these players extortionate amount of money, and I'm not being critical of the clubs, like we need people, like we want people pouring that money into the game, but if you are like a privately owned club, the likes of a Bristol, and you're paying Charles Pietau, whatever you're paying him, like I would be saying, well, I'm not paying you to go and play for Tonga, I'm paying you signed here as, I'm not, I hope that doesn't happen, but that will be something that I think needs to be addressed, is that they need to, World Rugby have done the right thing, but they need to make sure that these players are playing. It's already all going through the list and going like, oh, well, he can play, but are the clubs going to let them play? Are they going to be encouraged to play? How are they going to compensate clubs that are paying for those players, you know? Mm. It's very easy in Ireland because the clubs are not privately owned, they're owned by RFU, and it's all through, you know, release times and playing windows and rest windows. But I just think it'd be a crying shame if those guys had to take pay cuts or just ultimately made themselves unavailable because, I know Charles very well, obviously. And, like, Charles is one of, I think, either 10 or 11 from humble beginnings in Tonga. Like, so, you know, you would never begrudge Charles coming, like, cutting his career short, coming to the UK and earning a lot of money because, like, you know, he was picked up by a big school in New Zealand to go and, you know, scholarship. Mm. Like, he's not from a lot, so you wouldn't begrudge him earning a lot and send him at home. So he's got to prioritise his family. So, you know, how is that going to pan out? And I really hope that World Rugby get a solution to that, because it's one thing changing the eligibility rules, but then we need the player actually.
You need a global calendar, is what you're saying there, that aligns properly and ties everything up.
I want to see. I don't want to see a list of players that can play. I want to see the players playing.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they won't do it. I'm just saying I think overcoming that kind of money situation. And because we've heard, like with Daniel Leo's documentaries, that the funding those nations get is supposed to be pretty shambolic, and how is that going to work?
Yeah.
It's just like, is Nathan Hughes going to put his hand up and go and play for Fiji? Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, if you've seen that documentary, like, I actually had him on the podcast, an old podcast I did after that documentary, and like, got into real detail about it, and it is frightening. Like, it's some of those players have to pay money to go play it. Never mind not having facilities and not having this there. Some of them have to take money out of their own pocket so they can go play for their country.
It's mad.
Wow. You know what I mean? Like, and it's.
Well, hopefully World Rugby step up and they actually start funding these second-tier, third-tier nations, because it'll be better for rugby.
They're
for
not
instance,
gonna,
like,
lads,
one that came to the top of my head there, I think Toby Flood played for Germany or was going to play for Germany.
He
one
could,
stage.
Yeah, I think he retired, but he had one since he was thinking about playing, come back and playing for them next year.
Like,
or
things
next,
like
next
that. Do you know what I mean? That's going to be unbelievable for World Rugby, just these other countries playing. But, like, for instance, I could play for Hong Kong, I go back and play for Hong Kong Sevens, which would be hilarious. Yeah. Like, different things like that. What about you? You're just straight up Irish, nothing else.
My grandma's Scottish, so actually a few years ago I would have said that 3 years retired I could have gotten the Scotland team, but Scotland for once actually are quite good now. So,
what do you think about it?
There won't be a comeback. No,
that would be getting the exclusive there. How sort of exclusive?
Well, unfortunately, as I don't see it, it's not going to happen. Like, as in, unfortunately, there's too much money on one side of the white line when it comes to rugby and not none on the other side. And even things like when they play matches in Twickenham and they don't get any of the revenue or any of the gate, like, and they're filling these stadiums. And there was situations there where Fiji would play England. England get £20,000 per player for playing. The Fiji players get £250. You know, and these are the things that happen. Like, jeez. And it's we won't get too far into it. You could do a whole bloody another show on it.
The proof will be in the pudding.
Correct.
That's what I think. And yeah. I think it's a great idea. I'm so happy they've done it. But, like, when you look at the lists, I want to see them playing. And I don't think that'll be as easy as you think, just to go, oh, Fekitoa, where you go and play for Tonga? And,
yeah. You know, someone listed out a Tongan backline there that they could possibly put out in the World Cup if all these players play. And I was looking at it, like, and it was just absolutely, like Leo Mappy, I think, like, next year can go back for him because he'd be down from All Blacks 3 years by then. And then you've got Fekitoa coming in, you've got Pietro. Yeah. Literally, it would be one of the best backlines in the world.
But it also comes down to, Darren touched it a while ago, it comes down to their S&C programme and their calendar. And if they're getting sent away to play with Tonga for 3 weeks, what's their training going to be like? What's their nutrition going to be like? Where are they going to be sleeping? Like, all that.
It's like Fiji, like, you have the best players individually, but when you just throw them all together, you can't just throw them all together and expect them to be
especially when you've drafted a Rory Best, the coach. Somebody doesn't have a clue who's doing. Do you know what I mean? Like, a farmer, a fat farmer from Coins Pass, like, coaching Fiji.
Poor Rory.
poor Rory. Look,
we have to get him on the show just to go up for himself, won't we, Rory?
We'll have to get Rory on the show. I think we're in talks. We might have him on next year. We'll see what he's now.
That's the difference when you get to that level, like in talks.
I get a text, Darren.
We're absolutely stuffed here.
We tried to get him on, and it was just before it got announced that he was taking over Fiji and stuff. I think we were supposed to have him on that week, and he abandoned us to go to take a national coaching job. I mean,
We prefer having Darren here anyway. Nice and mustache.
You were popular on the last one saying he should be one of the presenters.
There's actually talk that they're getting their tin in the rugby lad.
No.
Look, guys, I'm happy. I'd love to have my Sundays back. I really would.
Oh.
Two hours down. I mean,
pass that iPad over. Take this show in every direction.
Take it away. Yeah. I'll happily take my Sundays off and chill out in Limerick, guys. No problem. It's fine.
Anyway, close it up for the last time there, so Jason.
give us it over. I'll close it up.
I think that's all we've got time for this week, guys. But before we go, we'd like to remind you of a very special competition in partnership with our sponsors, Bank of Ireland. We're looking to celebrate some of Club Rugby's most unsung heroes.
Every club across Connacht, Ulster, Munster and Leinster are kept ticking over by the players, the staff, the fans and everyone joining in part of their community.
We want your nominations as well as your reasons why, and who knows, we might turn up to help celebrate that person. So get your nominations into sportsshow.ie/rugby/never-stop-competing and get your nominations in now, please.
Guys, look, Darren, it's been brilliant to have you on. Obviously, two guys will definitely be back next week. I don't know if I will or if you will be here, but we will be back next week with some more URC action.
It was really good to be here. Thank you. I was really humbled to be in the Rugby Lads company again. So thank you very much.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.